Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. President Carter has suffered another foreign policy setback on the issue of Zimbabwe-Rhodesia. It happened last night in the Senate, and we'll hear about it from Bernard Kalb.
The advance predictions were right, that the president would be repudiated on maintaining sanctions against Rhodesia. He was. The Senate vote, 52-41, on a compromise proposal that would have preserved the embargo at least six more months. That defeat leaving intact the controversial amendment resisted by the White House, calling for removing sanctions in the immediate future. But there may have been a strategy in the administration's resistance to other compromise approaches. The objective, to smoke out the dimensions of Senate support against any quick lifting of the embargo. And those 41 losing votes represented a major advance for the administration compared to the 19 losing votes a few weeks ago, when the Senate, by 75-19, adopted a non-binding resolution calling for lifting the sanctions. Senator Church, who supported the administration, told reporters after last night's tally that Mr. Carter, if he should veto removing the embargo, now has more than enough votes to sustain any such presidential action. The Rhodesian issue will eventually wind up in the House, the outcome there uncertain, with Senator Church saying the sanction battle has just begun. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, Washington.
The new Treaty on Limitation of Strategic Arms came under resounding attack last night by Senator Henry Jackson. The Washington State Democrat will be perhaps the most influential senator when the ratification process begins. Jackson has expressed reservations about the treaty before. Last night's criticism, delivered before the Coalition for a Democratic Majority, was, as we hear from Ike Pappas, the harshest yet.
Senator Jackson said the SALT II treaty, as presently written, leaves the United States strategically inferior to the Soviet Union, adding that the acceptance of such a treaty by the Carter administration is reminiscent of the policy of appeasement toward Nazi Germany advocated by British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain just before World War II.
To enter into a treaty that favors the Soviets, as this one does, on the ground that we will be in a worse position without it, is, ladies and gentlemen, I think, appeasement in its purest form.
Aides to the senator said the speech, coming on the eve of President Carter's departure for Vienna and the SALT II signing, is meant to remind Mr. Carter and Soviet President Brezhnev that Jackson intends to fight to amend the treaty. Ike Pappas, CBS News, Washington.
Mr. Carter is in the midst of intense preparations for the Vienna summit, and Lee Thornton has some details.
This morning, President Carter will receive a transcript of a conversation between Soviet President Brezhnev and former ambassador to the Soviet Union, W. Averill Harriman. It's part of a massive amount of homework the president has been doing to get ready for his first ever meeting with Leonid Brezhnev. Administration officials say Mr. Carter has gone so far as to watch a videotape of Brezhnev, studying how the Russian leader communicates. Just how much was gleaned from that exercise, no one's saying, but it too was one step in what White House officials call systematic and deliberate preparation by the president. And that preparation goes back a long time. Last January, Mr. Carter discussed Brezhnev with Allied leaders on Guadeloupe. And since then, he's held a series of conversations with various people who've been involved in Soviet summitry. And it goes on. This afternoon, the president talks with the Joint Chiefs of Staff about the summit, working down to the wire before his departure early tomorrow. Lee Thornton, CBS News, the White House.
The American and Soviet delegations at the Vienna talks will hold four meetings and two working dinners this weekend. Before the treaty is signed, on Monday, there will be two more meetings and a private conference between Mr. Carter and Brezhnev. President Carter has reportedly expressed himself in strong terms about a potential challenge from Senator Kennedy in next year's presidential campaign. It happened at a White House dinner night before last. Democratic Congressman William Broadhead of Michigan recounts the incident.
A group of us sitting at the table, members of the House and the president, and somebody asked the president how he was feeling. And he said, I'm feeling fine. I'm not worried about 1980. If Kennedy runs, I'll whip his ass. And I said, excuse me, Mr. President, I didn't hear what you said, because I couldn't believe my ears. And then he said it again. He said, if Kennedy runs, I'll whip his ass. And we were all pretty surprised, and we just went on eating our meal, but nobody knew what to say at that point.
Broadhead's account was echoed by Democratic Congressman Thomas Downey of New York. A White House spokesman says he has no information about the purported remark quoted by the two congressmen. The U.S. Conference of Mayors is still in session in Pittsburgh, and Jerry Landay tells us what's going on.
The rhetoric of the good old gravy days of free and easy federal aid is being tempered here by what can be called the politics and policies of diminished expectations. Mayor Maynard Jackson of Atlanta yesterday sounded the keynote as American city halls prepare for what's being called the austere 80s. We're prepared to take our share of hard times, he declared. We're not prepared to take less than our share of hard times. Jackson has just been installed as new president of the National Conference of Democratic Mayors. They comprise the leadership of most of the larger cities. In a formal speech, Jackson complained that few of the programs espoused in President Carter's 1977 National Urban Policy had been enacted. Others had been scaled back or abandoned by what Jackson called an unresponsive Congress. America's cities, he complained, must fight hard just to stay in the same place. Federal urban aid reached a high water mark of $81 billion this year, but cuts by the administration and Congress are expected to start trimming that back at the very time when inflation, higher energy costs, and a lagging economy are compounding urban needs. The conference ends today. Said one mayor, we didn't solve much, but we sure fretted a lot. Jerry Landay, CBS News, Pittsburgh.
Oil is flowing through the Trans-Alaska pipeline again. The leak that forced a two-day shutdown has been repaired. This could be a crucial day in the Sandinista drive to overthrow Nicaragua's President Somoza. Charles Gomez reports from Managua.
Fighting between Sandinista guerrillas and National Guard soldiers is expected to peak today, with a major guard offensive planned for the neighborhood of Las Americas, a short distance away from Managua's Las Mercedes Airport. The guerrillas have been strongest in Las Americas and other barrios on both sides of the North Highway, which has remained practically impassable for the last 2 days. The highway is the main access road to the airport. Residents looted a Nabisco factory on the road yesterday, making off with thousands of boxes of wafers and other food. Radio Hello, a radio frequency used by the guerrillas, has been appealing to Sandinistas everywhere to bring their forces to the capital city. That ultimate step is needed by the Sandinista guerrillas to restore their movement's momentum after losing ground in the countryside. A military official who asked not to be identified confirmed reports that one National Guard pilot appears to have defected with a military plane used to drop rocket fire. But the official said that was a highly isolated incident and in no way reflected on President Somoza's support among the Guard. Charles Gomez, CBS News, Managua.
Panama has gone through 2 days of riots arising out of resentment over a 28% increase in gasoline prices. The trouble began Monday in Panama City and spread yesterday to Colón. Hospital officials say one woman was killed. Thailand's armed forces have now completed the first phase of a large operation designed to force nearly 80,000 refugees from Cambodia back into their own country. Peter Collins reports from Bangkok.
About half of the refugees, some 40,000 men, women, and children, have been herded into Cambodia at gunpoint. The move began 5 days ago with Thai soldiers collecting the refugees from various makeshift camps along the Thai-Cambodian border and ordering them onto buses. The refugees had fled Cambodia to seek food and to escape fighting between the Vietnamese army and Khmer Rouge forces loyal to the ousted Pol Pot regime. After being loaded onto the buses, the refugees were driven in long convoys escorted by the Thai army and then ordered to walk across the border into Cambodia at a point farther north, where the Thais say there is no fighting. The Thai government has rejected international criticism of its action and is now preparing to do the same thing with some 40,000 Khmer Rouge soldiers and their families. Peter Collins, CBS News, Bangkok.
The United States dollar went up a fraction in Tokyo this morning, but it's a trifle lower on the major European exchanges. Gold is selling at $276.50 an ounce in London and a bit less than that figure in Zurich. That represents a drop of around $2 an ounce from yesterday's closings in both London and Zurich.